His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Swami Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaura Pramanandi, Srimad Bhagavatam Granthadaj, Ki Jai. Om Akyam Tivananjusha, Jananjana Salakam, Chakshuram Militanjana, Tashma, Shri Vena Maham. Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam, Stavitam, Inbhutani, Swambhara, Gidame, Antarate, Swambhara, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Saraswati Gaura Bhaktivedanta. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 6, Creation of the Universal Form. Text number 27. 26, yeah, that's alright. That's okay. Sattvam chashavni bhinam. Mahamdishnyam upavishat. Tininam shena yinasho. Vikhanam pratipadyate. Consciousness. Cha. Also. Asya. Of the gigantic form. Nirbinham. Being separately manifested. Mahan. The total energy. Mahattattva. Dishnyam. With control, upavashat, entered into, chitenha amsina, along with his part of consciousness, yenha, by which, asho, the living entity, vijnanam, specific knowledge, patipadyate, cultivates. Thereafter, when his, that's the Supreme Lord, with a capital H, consciousness separately manifested itself, the total energy, Mahattattva, entered with his conscious part. Thus the living entity is able to conceive specific knowledge. Sri Krishna Shajo Dara Prabhyam Kam Nabhe Upadyata Kunanam Brittayo Yesha Pratiyante Sudayadaya. Thereafter, from the head of the gigantic form, the heavenly planets were manifested, and from his legs, the earthly planets. And from his abdomen, the sky separately manifested themselves. Within them, the demigods and others were also were manifested in terms of the modes of material nature. So, the Supreme Lord enters within the universal form. It's like the universal form waking and coming into activity. And of course, that allows the other living entities also to act with their consciousness as well. So then everything begins to manifest, you know, within the universal form. Yantikena satvina divyam deva prapayadare dharam raja sabhavhina panyo ye chatananu. The demigods, qualified by the super excellent quality of the mode of goodness, are situated in the heavenly planets, whereas the human beings, because of the nature of the mode of passion, live on the earth in company with their subordinates. Purport, post Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita 14 to 15, it is said that those who are highly developed in the mode of goodness are promoted to the higher heavenly planetary system, and those who are empowered by the mode of passion are situated in the middle planetary system. The earth and similar planets those empowered by the mode of passion are situated in the middle planetary systems, the earth and similar planets. But those who are charged with the mode of ignorance are degraded to the lower planetary systems or to the animal kingdom. The demigods are highly developed in the mode of goodness, and thus they are situated in the heavenly planets. Below, human beings are the animals, although some of them mingle with the human society, cows, horses, dogs, etc., are habituated to living under the protection of human beings. The word atyantikena is very significant in this verse. By development of the mode of goodness of material nature, one can become situated in the heavenly planets. By the excessive development of the modes of passion and ignorance, the human being indulges in killing the animals who are meant to be protected by mankind. Persons who indulge in unnecessary animal killing have excessively developed in the modes of passion and ignorance and have no hope of advancing to the mode of goodness. They are destined to be degraded to the lower statuses of life. The planetary systems are calculated as upper and lower in terms of the classes of living entities who live there. So we're a pundit. So there's one verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Who knows this verse? Which describes that the whole world is deluded by the modes of material nature, but the Lord is... Yeah, can you tell me? Yeah, can you say the translation? Yeah, so it's a quite a important verse that we see here. That all the living entities, they're spread throughout the universe, some in places where they're the mode of goodness, some in places which is predominated by passion, some are predominated by, the modes of ignorance. So the whole world, basically, is under the modes of material nature or attracted and bewildered by the modes of material nature. So all the living entities, they come into this world and actually their position within the material world is because of their conditioning or attraction by the modes of material nature. from a materialistic point of view, people have very what appears to be very high notions, I'm doing this particular work, I'm a social worker because I have these, very high aspirations doing this, and, I am a political leader because I have these high aspirations, I am saving the whale because I have these aspirations. But, when it comes down to it, from a devotee's perspective, whatever anyone is doing is because they're attached to one of the three modes of material nature, and that's really all it is. You can put some fancy, people are going to get a job, employment. There's so many different descriptions, right? There's so many different job titles these days. But really, it just comes down to, I'm attracted to the mode of ignorance, passion, or ignorance. I'll work in one of those three different ways like that. So, and they're bewildered by those modes of material nature, the living entities. Bewildered means that it's like they're under a spell. They're attracted. Under a spell, is like, as Bhaktivinoda says, that sleeping in the lap of the witch called Maya. That's under the spell. They're attracted to something which is repeatedly killing them. They're attracted to the material energy which is repeatedly keeping them in the cycle of birth and death, old age and disease. I got this job, I'm doing this activity, I have this hobby. I'm so attracted to it, But, they don't say, yes, people don't see that I'm attracted to this, but the net result is that for millions of lifetimes, you know, I will have immense suffering. You know, I can't even calculate the amount of suffering that I will have over so many lifetimes. So, you know, for someone to, as Prabhupada gives the example, he says, you know, if I, you know, put out this sweet rice and say, so, you know, sit, enjoy, sweet rice. But when you are finished, I will kill you. You know, will you eat it? You know, you put out the nice feast, you know, make it look really good, nice tablecloth, you know, beautiful chairs, you know, nice polished wood, beautiful setting, chandeliers. Come and enjoy that. But when you finish, I'm just going to kill you. No one will do it. So if someone did, if someone looked at that feast and thought, whew, oh, you know, and they just disregarded that last part of that person's statement, they're really bewildered, aren't they? They're really, you know, controlled by their mind and senses, and they're under, you know, they're just deluded. So material energy is like that. We're attracted to something which is actually killing us, which is causing us so much difficulty, you know, which is robbing us of the opportunity to experience the Satchitananda life like that. So, and because we're attracted, we never look into the spiritual reality. We're not attracted to Krishna. We don't want to understand. And if we hear about Krishna, we take it as a botheration. Just like there's one book distributor in America, and one of the sannyasis was asking him, you know, tell me of some of the great personalities, you know, you've distributed books to. So Michael Jackson, this one and that one. So he's riddling off some of the names. What about the Rolling Stones, Mick Jagger? Yeah. Tried to give Mick Jagger a book in the airport, and he said, don't bore me with that. You know. But his wife at that time, she said, oh, look, you know, you're just in a bad mood. You know, he's a nice devotee, Hare Krishna devotees, you know. So she bought the book and gave it to Mick Jagger. So he ended up getting one. But, you know, it's that we're so attracted that Krishna is somewhat of a botheration. We tend to, you know, we're really keen to just somehow find a good reason to dismiss Krishna. Oh, legend, myth, that, this, that, and the other, whatever. Dismiss. Krishna, you are dismissed. So this is how the modes of material nature work. Now, there's a nice prayer, but the devotees, they're not under the influence of the modes of material nature, and they're actually attracted by Krishna. Now, in these prayers by Queen Kunti, which I just happened to open up at practically the right page, Sri Goswami says, at the end of Queen Kunti's prayers, Sutra Vacha, Patayitam kalapadai pari nutta kila dayaha madham jahasa vakunto ohayan eva mahaya. Sri Goswami said, the Lord, thus hearing the prayers of Kunti Devi, composed in choice words for his glorification, mildly smiled. That smile was as enchanting as his mystic power. Prabhupada describes that in the purport. Anything that is enchanting in this world is said to be a representation of the Lord. The conditioned souls who engage in trying to lord it over the material world are also enchanted by his mystic powers. So through the Maya they're enchanted. You know, that's the Lord's mystic potencies. Covered by Maya. But his devotees are enchanted in a different way by the glories of the Lord and his merciful blessings upon them. So the word Maya can have the meaning of delusion or mercy. In this way, the Lord smiling at Kunti Devi is attracting her by his merciful smile. His energy is displayed in different ways, as electrical energy works in manifold capacities. Srimati Kunti Devi has prayed to the Lord just to enunciate a fragment of his glories. All his devotees worship him in that way by chosen words, and therefore the Lord is known as Uttama Shloka. No amount of chosen words is sufficient to enumerate the Lord's glories, and yet he is satisfied by such prayers as the father is satisfied even by the broken linguistic attempts of the growing child. The word Maya is used both in the sense of delusion and mercy. Herein the word Maya is used in the sense of the Lord's mercy upon Kunti Devi. So you see there that the devotees, they are attracted by Krishna's directly, not by the material energy. They're not deluded by the material energy, but to some degree. But even we as devotees, of course, being honest with ourselves, have to admit that, to some degree or another, we have some tendency to be still enchanted, maintain material attachments. One of the things I quite often hear, because I'm an astrologer, is that devotees say, "Oh, astrology, that's all your karma. We're devotees, we're liberated," and which is a fact, of course, Prabhupada uses this term. There's liberation in degrees. Yes, you're liberated. You can be liberated. Prabhupada gave this example that it's like we're having Ratha Yatra soon. It's described, you stand up for the Ratha Yatra car as it goes past, and you just stand there. You just happen to be on the streets of St. Kilda. Here goes Ratha Yatra. They're liberated. So do we expect that after the Ratha Yatra that everyone in St. Kilda will, be forever on the liberated platform? No. Prabhupada describes they become liberated immediately after they go back to their because they're attached. He also gives this example that if you have a bird in a cage and sometimes you open the door, now that bird is so attracted to that cage, you let it out of the cage, fly away, even fly outside. But if you stay and watch, it will just come back and hop in that cage of its own accord. It's now free to fly away at the cage. But, for devotees, it's like that. That's what liberated means. When you watch the Jagannath car go past, the doors of liberation are open. You're no longer locked in. You can get out if you like. But we go back in. Because we have our character is really there's I think it was a Plutarch who said that character is habit long practice. That's like, we practice some habits for millions and millions of lifetimes. It becomes our character. So although one can be liberated, we can still be conditioned, attached, attracted, even though we're not forced to be. Like that, you open the cage means the bird's not forced to go back in. Devotees actually not under karma that they're forced to do things by the modes of material nature, but they may voluntarily do that because of just long bad habit. So they can be liberated and conditioned at the same time. Therefore, liberation is by degrees. We Prabhupada also explains this, you know, with in India they have the Bhagavad Saptaha. You know, they'll come, they'll listen to the Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days. And Prabhupada says there's practically very little benefit. There's a little benefit. They gain some piety. But, you know, as soon as it's finished, all of them, including the person reciting the Bhagavad Saptaha, just go back to their conditioned life. Therefore, the Bhagavatam says that because it understands our long, you know, many, many lifetimes of bad habit. Read the Srimad Bhagavatam every day. So, Nityam Bhagavat Sevaya. Not Bhagavat Saptaha Sevaya. And, you know, similarly with reading the Gita, you know, we see this, people read the Bhagavad Gita, and of course you also become liberated from reading the Bhagavad Gita, associated with Krishna. But many don't take that opportunity, but they still develop some piety. Where is that stated in the Bhagavad Gita? I've got a Bhagavad Gita. Can someone pass me a Bhagavad Gita? Where is that stated? What's that? Yes. That's exactly right. Well done. Good to see someone's reading. Verse number, chapter 18, text number 71. Sharavan anasuyascha shunuyad apiyon naraha sopi mukta shubalokan prabhuyad punyakalamanam. And one who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions and attains to the auspicious planets where the pious dwell. It's an interesting verse. You'd expect Krishna to say, one who listens to this becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. But Krishna is, you know, explaining to us that, you know, this process generally happens by degrees. And this is really nicely explained by Srila Prabhupada in the purport here. He says in the 67th verse of this chapter, the Lord explicitly forbade the Gita's being spoken to those who are envious of the Lord. In other words, Bhagavad Gita is for the devotees only. But it so happens that sometimes a devotee of the Lord would hold open class, and in that class, not all the students are expected to be devotees. Why do such persons hold open class? It is explained here that although not everyone is a devotee, still there are many men who are not envious of Krishna. They have faith in him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, or we can add, they may have faith in Krishna's representative as well. They have faith in him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If such persons hear from a bona fide devotee about the Lord, the result is that they become at once free from all sinful reactions, and after that they attain to the planetary system where all righteous persons are situated. Therefore, simply by hearing Bhagavad Gita, even a person who does not try to be a pure devotee attains the results of righteous activities. Thus, a pure devotee, the Lord gives everyone a chance to become free from all sinful reactions and to become a devotee of the Lord. Generally, those who are free from sinful reactions, those who are righteous, very easily take to Krishna consciousness. So it's a preaching tool. Help people become at least pious, free from sinful reaction, righteous. Such persons, it's easier to make such persons Krishna conscious than, as it describes in the purport here, persons who indulge in unnecessary animal killing have excessively developed in the modes of passion and ignorance and have no hope of advancing to the mode of goodness. Thus, they are destined to be degraded to lower statuses of life. So helping people come to Sattva Guna helps them to elevate even to Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada goes on to say, the word punyakarmanam is very significant here. This refers to the performance of great sacrifices like the Ashwamedha Yajna mentioned in the Vedic literature. So one part of making people righteous, or, you know, is we perform some skaras or jagas, we get them to chant Hare Krishna, we get them to chant, you know, have prasadam, we get them to, you know, accept the garland, to see the deities, to engage in the festivals, to attend the Ratha Yatra, like this, so many things. To hear Bhagavad Gita. Those who are righteous in performing devotional service, but who are not pure, can attain to the planetary systems of the Pole Star or Dhruva Loka, where Dhruva Maharaj is presiding. He is a great devotee of the Lord, and he has a special planet which is called the Pole Star. You know, so that's very interesting there, that, you know, some people who hear the Bhagavad Gita will go to the Pole Star of Dhruva Maharaj. So, but Pole Star of Dhruva Maharaj, so many nice devotees, you know, under the guidance of Dhruva Maharaj. And therefore, they get the benefit of, in the association of devotees, first becoming righteous and purified, free from sinful activities and sinful reactions. They're in a very good position to actually gradually take up Krishna consciousness in pure devotional service. And when such persons do take up Krishna consciousness in pure devotional service, although they've taken up pure devotional service under the guidance of the devotees, they may still be performing devotional service tinged by various modes of material nature, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I've got one prepared here. He describes text number 8, devotional service executed by a person who is envious, proud, violent and angry, who is a separatist, who is considered to be in the mode of darkness. The worship of the deities in the temple by a separatist with a motive of material enjoyment, fame and opulence is devotional service in the mode of passion. When a devotee worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offers the results of his activities in order to free himself from the inebrieties of fruitive activities, his devotion is in the mode of goodness. So here it's describing that sometimes people are, you know, performing devotional service, reading the Bhagavad Gita, attending the temple, doing various things, actually in order to become righteous, in order to become pious, in order to become, you know, free from the reactions of the material energy, you know, to become liberated. Prabhupada once joked, he said, most of my disciples are, you know, desiring to attain the heavenly planets. You know. But Now this is interesting because one can perform on the path of pure devotional service and yet performing devotional service in the beginning with all sorts of other attractions to the material modes of material nature, and therefore one's devotional service is tinged in that way. But those devotees are very much appreciated, you know, by the Lord and by the devotional community as well. And Prabhupada gives this, you know, one time in India, one of the Indian persons, I think he was on a morning walk with Prabhupada, he challenged, you know, are your disciples actually following bhakti? No, they're not following bhakti. So many anathas, you know, there's so much attraction to the modes of material nature. How is it possible? You know, Prabhupada himself says that real bhakti begins when there's no sex desire, you know, and the Bhagavad Gita says, you know, bhakti begins, you know, from the liberated platform. Prabhupada said, no, their love for me is genuine. You know? And he gave the example of the green mango. That, you know, a green mango, you know, sometimes, you know, we select the, you know, very ripe, you know, perfectly mature mangoes, and they may be, you know, offered to the Lord like that. But sometimes some of the mangoes, you know, you may get rain or some wind, and some of the green mangoes just fall to the ground. So we don't just neglect them, you know, they're a mango. They may be green, but it's a mango, you know, it's a really value. Even green, you know, it's a very valuable. And, you know, if you take the green mango, of course, and you make the green mango pickle, you know, which is very good. And especially if you go to, if you do preaching in a lot of people's homes and they like to feed you all sorts of opulent foods, you know, a little bit of, is it the acha? Is it the go? You know, a little bit of the green mango pickle is very, very helpful. It helps you to digest all the ghee. And the, you know. So, but, and there are different, you know, so even, you know, and therefore we saw in that those prayers by Queen Kunti, Prabhupada says, no amount of chosen words is sufficient to enumerate the Lord's glory, and yet he is satisfied by such prayers as the Father is satisfied even by the broken linguistic attempts of the growing child. Even though the devotees in the very beginning, they may have, you know, different, you know, or even not so much in the beginning, you know, persons like myself, you know, so many years still, you know, under the influence of Maya. But still, by Krishna's grace, you know, he accepts the attempt that we do in our devotional service, just like, you know, seeing us as a small child. And of course, that's what we are, you know, if we understand the great devotional prowess of personalities like Kunti Devi, went through so many difficulties, but she never ever forgot Krishna and never ever you know, asked Krishna for anything. Her prayer is her mood of pure devotional service is mentioned here.
O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea, without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. So that's the mood of pure devotional service. And that exact same prayer, you know, after Lord Kapila, speaks the verses on devotional service tinged by the modes of material nature, he speaks this verse which describes devotional service in pure devotional service. He says, the manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is residing in everyone's heart, just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally downwards towards the ocean. Such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows towards the Supreme Lord. So we see that Queen Kunti's prayers exactly echoes that statement of Lord Kapila. And you know, one time when Akrura, Krishna sent Akrura to monitor the activities of the Kurus, who were known to be harassing the Pandavas. And Akrura went there, and Akrura Queen Kunti, very much appreciated each other's devotional service. And when Akrura mentioned the name of Krishna, then immediately, just upon hearing that, Queen Kunti, her body erupted into, ecstatic symptoms just by hearing Krishna's name from, Akrura, like that. So immediately attracted in a very ecstatic way. So these, in the beginning of devotional service, of course, we don't have that spontaneous, but it doesn't mean that one's devotional service that may be affected by the modes of material nature is actually not valuable. It's actually still, to be a devotee, even on the beginning of the path of devotional service, is glorified throughout the scriptures as a greater position than the successors of the jnanis and yogis and what have you. Not that we're deriding their advanced position, but still, it is a very greatly fortunate position to be in. Not the one who's so qualified, but it's a very fortunate position to be in, somehow or another, by the mercy of Krishna, by the mercy of the devotees, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we, if we offer prayers to the Supreme Lord, we always have to be aware that we may be afflicted, somehow or another in our consciousness by the modes of material nature. Therefore, we perform devotional service by following in the footsteps of great devotees. So when we stand before the deities to offer prayers, we're very careful that even in offering prayers or chanting the holy names, we try to offer prayers as Queen Kunti did, or as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. Nādhanam nājanam nāsundarim kavitam bhājigirishakami mama janmani janmani shri babatad bhakti ayatiki twai. I have no desire to accumulate wealth. I have no desire to beautiful women, nor fame, or this or that. Not even liberation. I only desire pure devotional service, birth after birth. So, if we perform our devotional service following in the footsteps of the acharyas and great devotees, then even though we may be, affected by the modes of material nature in our situation, devotional service, Krishna still accepts it. One, because we're trying, because we're making an attempt, and two, because we're making an attempt in the right way, where we will definitely be successful. Because if we keep praying like Lord Chaitanya, if we keep praying like Queen Kunti Devi, gradually what happens is the realization comes. In the beginning of devotional service, there's some appreciation for Krishna, as it describes. One may not even be trying to be a devotional service, but there may be some appreciation of Krishna, the Bhagavad Gita, the temples, the devotees, the spiritual acharyas, like that. gradually by following in their footsteps, you know, understanding what they're doing, what they want us to do, and doing that, you gradually develop an affection for the Lord. That appreciation turns into affection for the Lord, his devotees, the process, and gradually that affection turns into pure love. In the beginning, there is practice, sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti then becomes, we're just practicing, but the realization is not there. But we're practicing what these great personalities are teaching. You do this, this is pure devotional, so you just do that. We don't have the realization, but still we do it. That means we're performing pure devotional service in the neophyte stage. Then the realization comes. We understand, you know, and we have that mood and feeling as Bhava Bhakti. And then gradually, Prema Bhakti is there where devotees have full Krishna conscious in pure love and their every thought, their every activity. It's constantly, you know, favorably, you know, absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and they cannot be diverted. It is those genuine devotees we try to follow, and if we do that, then despite, you know, our situation as, you know, beginning devotees, we're safe on the path of pure devotional service. Be very careful, you know, of, you know, we have so many wonderful examples in the Shastra. And within, you know, living examples within ISKCON. Be careful not to follow someone who may not be genuine, that they may be, you know, attached to the material modes of nature quite strongly. it will hamper one's devotional service. Vishwanath Chakravarti, the course, says that just as... it's, you know, attachment to the opposite sex is dangerous. He says actually attachment to someone who's attached to the opposite sex is more dangerous. He says similarly, attachment to Krishna is more beneficial, but if you're attached to someone who's really attached to Krishna, it's actually more powerful. So, you know, we should try to be attached to those who are really, 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 really attached to Krishna. And, you know, we should, you know, always be trying to see the genuineness of devotees. And, you know, that is generally, that's why we have these personalities like Kunti. Because how do we know someone's genuine? Because despite everything they go through, they're always fixed up in Krishna consciousness in a favourable way. So when we see devotees in ISKCON who do similar things, then we become, you know, then we take shelter. Yes, there is a genuine devotee. You know, so many years of, you know, difficult service and, you know, always attached like that. So, you know, there's a story, actually a true story, about, you know, how you test, you know, just testing the genuine nature of someone. That in the Second World War, I think it was, Churchill, was it Second? So, you know, in the offices, they one German spy had infiltrated. So he was, he'd actually learnt to speak the English language, you know, in the English accent, so perfectly that no one could, you know, he had the exact, you know, English accent, and all the mannerisms of an officer, you know, of a gentleman, very, very, you know, English gentleman like that. But the, you know, Churchill and others, they knew there must be a spy, because, you know, every time we dispatch the officer somewhere, something goes wrong, someone's, you know, must be giving out information, so there's a spy, you know, someone in there is not genuine. So now this spy, so what they did is they started interviewing people. So actually the German officer was actually one of the interviewing officers. So he was very good. Anyway, they couldn't catch him. So Churchill devised a plan. And what they did was they asked him to this. They suspected, you know, maybe this one. But they had to catch him out. So they asked him to come into one of the offices, just, you know, some routine thing, discuss something. And as he was coming in, one of the other officers slammed the door on his fingers. And he cursed in German. So, my point is that we have these examples, you know, of genuine devotees, that they are tested to show us, you know, that's why we, you know, why did Krishna do that to the Pandavas? Why did he put Kunti through that? Because we have to know that Krishna is showing they're genuine devotees. You can't stop them from thinking about me no matter what happens. You can't. And you can't stop them loving me favorably no matter what happens. And they will never ask me for anything. You know, one time Prabhupada was giving a lecture on Lord Varaha's appearance day. He's speaking about different devotees of the Lord. And then he said, he'd only been speaking for about 5 minutes. And he said, but the devotees of the gopis of Vrindavan, they never ask Krishna for anything. And then he just started crying and then stopped the lecture. That was it. He couldn't speak. Then, you know. No one underwent more sacrifice or difficulty than the gopis. It's described that Madhuri Ras, when every reason is present for that relationship to be stopped, and it doesn't stop, that is pure. So, you know, we have these examples, and and ISKCON is filled with so many genuine devotees in this temple, in so many temples, and those genuine devotees are following other genuine devotees, and if we follow those devotees and the path of pure devotional service, even though we may be immature ourselves, our path, it is very, very pleasing to Krishna, just as a father is accepting progress of the child. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. That's right, yeah. You can, if that's, Prabhupada describes this, the Bhagavad Gita describes that. You can become predominantly situated in goodness, but unless you have the shelter, the spiritual energy of devotional service, you can't remain fixed in it. Yeah, so you do need to be fixed in devotion, especially in Kali Yuga. And, you know, that position of goodness means detachment from everything in the material world. Completely detached. The more one is detached from material modes of material nature, the more one is... It is actually one of the tests of how one is advancing in Krishna consciousness. The more one is attached to Krishna, concomitantly one can be detached from material energy. But one should not... One should be very careful when looking at devotees and think, you know, here's one devotee, the Grihastha devotee, I'm attached, you know. Oh, here's the detached devotee, we have the Brahmacharis, Sannyasudhava. The Brahmacharis living simply, they have no possessions. Oh, here's the Grihastha, very opulent, nice car like that, So, you know, what's going on there? Actually, it has no real bearing on one's devotional service. As Krishna said to Arjuna, he said, actually, you're the real sannyasi. He was a grihastha, he was very opulent. Who can be more opulent than Arjuna? But he called him sannyasi because it's how attached you are to serving Krishna favorably that is the criteria that's wanted, not your ashram. Now, it's a very difficult thing to understand. Therefore, even one time someone asked this question of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. We see devotees like Ramananda Roy, you know, so opulent and, you know, absorbed in so many material things. And apparently, we see devotees like Raghunath Das Goswami, you know. How do we understand that they're both, you know, supposed to be detached? You know, one's immersed in everything, you know, everything in this material world, apparently, and one is just not having anything to do with it. And yet we're supposed to understand that they're both, you know, nicely situated. So he gave this example. Very, very, you know, brilliant, as always. That sometimes when, you know, especially in Vedic times, of course, not so much now. Probably the opposite now, but when the husband would go away from home, you know, the wife would dress very simply, you know, nothing so colourful, you know, simple clothes, and wouldn't wear makeup, and you know, wouldn't have you know, fragrant baths and you know, so many things, you know, so much jewellery and things. Very, very simple like that. Live very, very, and she may even eat very simply and spend a lot of time, you know, performing different austerities and studying the scriptures and perform, you know, whatever like that. But when the husband comes home, she has, you know, the baths and, you know, the fragrant oils and, you know, puts on the makeup and the earrings and beautiful saris and, you know, cooks opulent foods and eats that with the husband like that. So the Bhakti Siddhanta said that both activities are meant for the pleasure of the husband. They appear to be two different activities, but they're one because they're both meant for the pleasure of the husband. And similarly, you know, a devotee, for, you know, whatever reason that Krishna desires, one may worship Krishna as a grihastha, sometimes with all opulence, or a grihastha living very simply, some as brahmacharis, some as sannyas, manapas. But when the same goal is there, you know, that they're doing it for the pleasure of Krishna, then there is no material consideration.
I just read a few days back, Rupa saying a brahmachari is nice, but if you can live with a beautiful and obliging wife, and then being a brahmachari, then you are even higher.
Yes, or you could put it this way, you know. Living with a wife is nice, but if you can live as a brahmachari, that's also very good. No, that's a fact. Look, it makes the real criteria is, you know, how attached we are to Krishna, you know, how we are not enchanted by the modes of material nature, but we're enchanted by the smile of Sri Sri Radha Balava Jagannath Balaram Subhadra Devi Sri Sri Gornatai Govardhan Srila Shalagram Srila Dwaka Srila Kija. And of course, the spiritual master's lotus feet. Jai. Hare Krishna.